that they are said, by the natives, to have fallen in thunderstorms. As to luminosity, it is my lamentable acceptance that bodies falling through this earth's atmosphere, if not warmed even, often fall with a brilliant light, looking like flashes of lightning. This matter seems important, we'll take it up later, with data. In Prussia, two stone axes were found in the trunks of trees, one under the bark. Blinkenberg, Thunder Weapons, p. 100. The finders jumped to the conclusion that the axes had fallen there. Another stone axe or wedge-shaped object of work stone said to have been found in a tree that had been struck by something that looked like lightning. Thunder Weapons, p. 71. The finder jumped to the conclusion. Story told by Blinkenberg, of a woman, who lived near Kulsbjergene, Sweden, who found a flint near an old willow near her house. I emphasize near her house because that means familiar ground. The willow had been split by something. She jumped. Cow killed by lightning, or by what looked like lightning, Isle of Sark, near Guernsey. The peasant who owned the cow dug up the ground at the spot and found a small green stone axe. Blinkenberg says that he jumped to the conclusion that it was this object that had fallen luminously, killing the cow. Reliquary, 1867-208. A flint axe found by a farmer, after a severe storm described as a fearful storm by a signal staff, which had been split by something. I should say that nearness to a signal staff may be considered familiar ground. Whether he jumped, or arrived at the conclusion by a more leisurely process, the farmer thought that the flint object had fallen in the storm. In this instance we have a lamentable scientist with us. It's impossible to have positive difference between orthodoxy and heresy, somewhere there must be a merging into each other, or an overlapping. Nevertheless, upon such a subject as this, it does seem a little shocking. In most works upon meteorites, the peculiar, sulfurous odor of things that fall from the sky is mentioned. Sir John Evans, Stone Implements, p. 57, says with extraordinary reasoning powers, if he could never have thought such a thing with ordinary reasoning powers that this flint object proved to have been the bolt, by its peculiar smell when broken. If it did so prove to be, that settles the whole subject. If we prove that only one object of work stone has fallen from the sky, all piling up of further reports is unnecessary. However, we have already taken the stand that nothing settles anything, that the disputes of ancient Greece are no nearer solution now than they were several thousand years ago, all because, in a positive sense, there is nothing to prove or solve or settle. Our object is to be more nearly real than our opponents. Wideness is an aspect of the universal. We go on widely. According to us, the fat man is nearer godliness than is the thin man. Eat, drink, and approximate to the positive absolute. Beware of negativeness, by which we mean indigestion. The vast majority of thunderstones are described as axes, but many, Law Nature, 1892-2-381, tells of one that was in his possession, said to have fallen at Gardia, Algeria, contrasting profoundment, pear-shaped, with the angular outlines of ordinary meteorites. The conventional explanation that it had been formed as a drop of molten matter from a larger body seems reasonable to me, but with less agreeableness I note its fall in a thunderstorm, the datum that turns the orthodox meteorologist pale with rage, or induces a slight elevation of his eyebrows, if you mention it to him. Many tells of another thunderstone said to have fallen in North Africa. Many, too, is a little lamentable here. He quotes a soldier of experience that such objects fall most frequently in the deserts of Africa. Rather miscellaneous now. Thunderstone said to have fallen in London, April, 1876, weight about 8 pounds, no particulars as to shape, Tim's Year Book, 1877-246. Thunderstone said to have fallen at Cardiff, September 26, 1916, London Times, September 28, 1916. According to Nature, 98-95, it was coincidence, only a lightning flash had been seen. stone that fell in a storm, near St. Albans, England, accepted by the Museum of St. Albans, said, at the British Museum, not to be of true meteoritic material. Nature, 8034. London Times, April 26, 1876. That, April 20, 1876, near Wolverhampton, fell a mass of meteoritic iron during a heavy fall of rain. An account of this phenomenon in Nature, 14-272, by H.S. Maskelyne, who accepts it as authentic. Also, see Nature, I3-531. For three other instances, see the Scientific American, 47-194, 52-83, 68-325. As to wedge shape larger than could very well be called an axe. Nature, 30-300. That, May 27, 1884, at Tisnes, Norway, a meteorite had fallen, that the turf was torn up at the spot where the object had been supposed to have fallen, that 2 days later a very peculiar stone was found nearby. The description is in shape and size very like the fourth part of a large Stilton cheese. It is our acceptance that many objects and different substances have been brought down by atmospheric disturbance from what only as a matter of convenience now, and until we have more data we call the Super Sargasso Sea, however, our chief interest is in objects that have been shaped by means similar to human handicraft. Description of the Thunderstones of Burma, PROC Asiatic SOC of Bengal, 1869-183, said to be of a kind of stone unlike any other found in Burma, called thunderbolts by the natives. I think there's a good deal of meaning in such expressions as unlike any other found in Burma, but that if they had said anything more definite, there would have been unpleasant consequences to writers in the 19th century. More about the Thunderstones of Burma, in the PROC SOC Antique of London, February 3, 97. One of them, described as an adze, was exhibited by Captain Duff, who wrote that there was no stone like it in its neighborhood. Of course it may not be very convincing to say that because a stone is unlike neighboring stones it had foreign origin, also we fear it is a kind of plagiarism, we got it from the geologists, who demonstrate by this reasoning the foreign origin of erratics. We fear we're a little gross and scientific at times. But it's my acceptance that a great deal of scientific literature must be read between the lines. It's not everyone who has the lamentableness of a Sir John Evans. Just as a great deal of Voltaire's meaning was interlinear, we suspect that a Captain Duff merely hints rather than to risk having a Professor Lawrence Smith fly at him and call him a half-insane man. Whatever Captain Duff's meaning may have been, and whether he smiled like a Voltaire when he wrote it, Captain Duff writes of the extremely soft nature of the stone, rendering it equally useless as an offensive or defensive weapon. Story, by a correspondent, in Nature, 34-53, of a Malay, of considerable social standing, and one thing about our data is that, damned though they be, they do so often bring us into awful good company, who knew of a tree that had been struck, about a month before, by something in a thunderstorm. He searched among the roots of this tree and found a thunderstone. Not said whether he jumped or leaped to the conclusion that it had fallen, process likely to be more leisurely in tropical countries. Also I'm afraid his way of reasoning was not very original, just so were fragments of the Bath Furnace meteorite, accepted by orthodoxy, discovered. We shall now have an unusual experience. We shall read of some reports of extraordinary circumstances that were investigated by a man of science, not of course that they were really investigated by him, but that his phenomena occupied a position approximating higher to real investigation than to utter neglect. Over and over we read of extraordinary occurrences, no discussion, not even a comment afterward findable, mere mention occasionally, burial and damnation. The extraordinary and how quickly it is hidden away. Burial and damnation, or the obscurity of the conspicuous. We did read of a man who, in the matter of snails, did travel some distance to assure himself of something that he had suspected in advance, and we remember Professor Hitchcock, who had only to smite Amherst with the wand of his botanical knowledge, and lo! Two fungi sprang up before night, and we did read of Dr. Gray and his thousands of fishes from one pailful of water, but these instances stand out, more frequently there was no investigation. We now have a good many reported occurrences that were investigated. Of things said to have fallen from the sky, we make, in the usual scientific way, two divisions, miscellaneous objects and substances, and symmetric objects attributable to beings like human beings, subdividing into wedges, spheres, and discs. Jure. Roy. Med. Soc. 14-207. That, July 2, 1866, a correspondent to a London newspaper wrote that something had fallen from the sky, during a thunderstorm of June 30, 1866, at Notting Hill. Mr. G. T. Simons, of Simons Meteorological Magazine, investigated, about as fairly, and with about as unprejudiced a mind, as anything ever has been investigated. He says that the object was nothing but a lump of coal, that next door to the home of the correspondent coal had been unloaded the day before. With the uncanny wisdom of the stranger upon unfamiliar ground that we have noted before, Mr. Simon saw that the coal reported to have fallen from the sky, and the coal unloaded more prosaically the day before, were identical. Persons in the neighborhood, unable to make this simple identification, had bought from the correspondent pieces of the object reported to have fallen from the sky. As to credulity, I know of no limits for it, but when it comes to paying out money for credulity, oh, no standards to judge by, of course, just the same.